This program is a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and is brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guests, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.
97 Gold presents Your Money with Fay Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Now, here's Fay Bagby on 97 Gold.
Good morning.
Well, good morning, Faye. How are you?
I'm wonderful. It's Saturday.
Every Saturday is wonderful. You always say that on Saturday.
I love Saturdays. You ought to have known this by now. After this many years, Faye loves Saturdays. I don't know. It's just a magical time for me. It's, you know, I can go and shop. I can do all kinds of girl things, you know?
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know. During the week, we all work, and we work hard and a lot of hours, and just Saturday's just a lazy, fun day.
It is. It's a lazy, fun day, and then on Sunday, we have a few obligations. We have to get up, but, you know, those are the good kinds of obligations because we've taken Saturday. We've kind of chilled out a little bit. We've taken our time a little bit, so we should be a little bit recharged by Sunday, and then we're ready to go.
And remember, on Sunday, we know we have to go to church.
Yes.
We know we have to have lunch with some people,
mm-hmm.
or family. And then you get to spend half a day, you know, doing something. But it's not like Saturday where you have that whole day. Just, okay, the men go to the barber shop. They go to the coffee shop with the other thing. Girls all go shopping. They go to the beauty shop. They get their nails done. I mean, it's a fun time.
It is. And I've noticed a lot of people that I know have a regular Saturday routine. They do. They go to the same coffee shop or they go to the same restaurant, and like 5 or 10 of them will sit around a table and they'll talk and they'll gossip and they'll eat their breakfast. And it's a great day, really.
And, you know, men, and I hate to say this, men do not do anything by themselves. I've noticed this over the years. They all have to go drink coffee with somebody else.
Oh, yeah.
And they have breakfast with somebody else. That's just, and I wonder if their wives know that they're going to McDonald's every morning for breakfast. Do they think they're eating at home? No, they're not. I've caught them. I know what they're doing.
You have spies everywhere catching men doing stuff, don't you?
That's right. Yes, and so we know that they have these little secrets, like they're going to McDonald's and having breakfast, and I wonder if they've already had breakfast at home.
Oh.
Sometimes I wonder. I say, I wonder about that.
You can never have too many breakfasts, you know.
Apparently not. Well, let's give out the phone number.
Let's do that.
Okay, the phone number is 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
This is Your Money with Fay Bagby, and it's all about growing your money so that you can retire early and happy and wealthy. And that's the goal, really, with everything. It always comes down to how much money can we make for as little work as possible. And that's really what this is all about. Because when we're in the big program here is the life settlement. This is what we focus on a lot of times as far as growing your wealth in the safest way possible. And it really is. It is all about doing as absolutely little as possible and making the most money, because once you get in the program and once you start, it pretty much almost runs itself. I mean, you're doing things and your staff and team are doing things, but as far as the investor goes, there's not a lot of effort on their part.
No, they can sit back and relax and say, okay, they'll let us know when the policy comes due. In fact, we're putting money in three different accounts on Monday. People that have had policies mature, the money is there, it's going into their accounts, and check their accounts on Monday, and the money will be in there. And in the meantime, we're emailing them saying, look for the money, it's in your account. And that's all they have to do, is just say, did I get an email from Faith saying the money's there? And you know, we know it takes 6 to 8 weeks to get the money in there. And we've had that one case where state of Pennsylvania didn't help us. You know, they wouldn't give us the death certificate. And I'd never heard of that in my life. But other than that, the people don't really have to do much. They have to acknowledge when we send them an email and say, do you want in this policy? And sometimes they don't get back to us quick enough, and we have to close it, so we go on to someone else. One of my good customers called this week, and he said, Faye, I missed out on that policy the other day. Can I get in another one? Is there another one available? I said, this next week I hope to have about three available, two large ones and a small policy. But like you say, we do all the work. We manage it for you. We make sure you're in policies, good policies. We work on this every day to get them good policies.
And so let's zoom out just a little bit, because I know sometimes we get zoomed in on the types of policies, and then sometimes we kind of, it's good to back off a little bit and just kind of look at the big picture. When you're investing in a life settlement, you're investing in a life insurance policy that somebody has had to sell. Now, people sell their policies for a number of different reasons. The kind that you're buying are very specific. You're only buying policies of people who have been diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, and you do this for very specific reasons. And so when people are looking at this, what would you say are the big reasons? Why go for stage 4 cancer policies only?
Because it has a short shelf life. In other words, we know these people in 24 months, 30 months, whatever, we know that they will not be with us any longer. And so we know that the people earn their money a little quicker doing it this way. And we don't do, you know, the old people anymore. We don't do seniors that are 90 years old, because that's another group that we don't want to be involved in. We've already done that, and we saw that it didn't work. And so when we realized that the safest way to invest their money is a cancer policy, and it takes longer sometimes to buy the cancer policies. There's a lot more work involved up front, but it's worth the, you know, the extra effort that we go to get them, and the extra time we spend, because these are good policies, and they do, a lot of them come due early, a lot of them come due on time, and then we have the stragglers, the ones that don't come in on time. And but it all evens out. It always has.
And that's how the whole process works. You know, when you say it evens out, we're talking about a strategy over several years. So, you know, it's not like people just get into one policy and it matures and they have enough to retire. That's not the intent. That's not how it works. That has nothing to do with this plan at all. The way this works is that you get into a number of policies. And so when you say it all evens out, this is a strategy that you start, and you figure out where people are right now. How much money do you have now? How much do you need when you retire? And then how long do we have to get there? And that's how you figure out that trajectory. That's how you know which policies to put people in. Are you a little bit more aggressive with the number of policies, or do you back off? Is that basically, in a nutshell, an oversimplified way of how the whole process works?
That's basically the way it works. We figure out how much you're going to need and what year are you going to need. Now, I've got two or three clients right now say, they were fixing to retire. And I go, is that in 6 months or is that in a year? You know, and they're not sure yet. So, you know, we've got to figure that out with them. Then I've got clients that have already retired, and when they retired last year, they said, this is how much we're going to need per year. One said $200,000. One said we're going to need $80,000. So every case is different. And so you've got to leave enough up front in their account, you know, like for a year or 2 years to take care of them, till another policy comes due. But if it works right and you have enough policies coming due, which usually we do, it'll take care of that, and they'll be using just the interest. I'm trying to keep them from using their principal, because if you can stay out of the principal, you're in great shape.
Mm-hmm. So what would you say is the biggest attraction to a life settlement? What's the big thing that gets people excited?
I think the biggest thing is the amount of money you can make and do it conservatively over and over again. Mm-hmm. In other words, if you're investing in two-year policies, you know you're going to make 24% every time. Mm-hmm. You know, it's 1% a month, which is a good amount. And it's different than the stock market or mutual funds or you know, all the hybrids that you can get, because you know what you're going to make up front. You don't know exact dates of when you're going to get paid, but you know you'll get paid. It's a life insurance policy. And that takes a lot of the risk out, knowing it's a life insurance company that's going to pay you. It's not me paying you. It's the life insurance company that's paying you. So you know what you're going to make. You know approximately when it's going to come due. It may come due early, may come due on time, but you've got all that to look forward to. And once you get started, you know, then we let you know every time a policy has matured. Then you go back and you redo it again, because most of this is all IRA money. So you don't want to take delivery of the cash right now. You want to keep investing it as you go.
You know, I was talking to somebody earlier this week, and they said, how do you, I don't understand how a life insurance policy can be profitable. How can I make money off of that? And I explained it as best I could. I mean, I know what it is. You know how it is, and your investors know how it works. What would you say to somebody who's totally brand new to the concept? How do you make money on a life insurance policy?
Okay. Remember, we're looking at the face value. We don't pay the face value for it. We couldn't. If we paid face value up front, there would be no profit. So when somebody comes to us with a $1 million policy, let's say, we're going to pay maybe $800,000, $750,000, but there's got to be enough in there for our client to make their profit and for us to make a little bit, okay? Mm-hmm. So we buy it at a discount, and then when the policy matures, we collect the face amount, and that's how they make their profit.
Okay. So you're paying like 60, 70% of the face value, and then that gap
probably
is...
Probably 70 to 75.
Okay. So then that gap is, that's the profit margin right there. And so when it goes over, and I know that the going over is one of the risks, and you have to pay premiums and things like that, and we'll get into that here in just a little bit. But when it goes over, you're looking at all of these different factors, you know, going over would be one of them. And then you're looking at other things for, you know, to make sure that, hey, no matter what happens, this is still going to be a profitable investment for people. So what kinds of things, when you're looking at a policy, when somebody says, hey, I want to sell this policy, I've got stage 4 cancer, I need to sell this, will you buy it? What kinds of things are you looking at when you think about making a bid?
Okay, I'm thinking, first of all, how sick is this person? Is it progressing? Has it stopped progressing? I looked at one this week, which was really a shocker to me, and they told how many chemo treatments they'd had. It was lung cancer. And then they said, we're going to do 40 treatments of radiation. I thought, the person will never survive that much.
Wow.
Can you imagine 30 or 40 treatments of radiation on top of chemo?
No, the body can't take that.
The body can't take it. That is severe, really severe. And I look at how much it's progressed. When they first started, how many centimeters was it? Was it 2.0 centimeter? Was it 12 centimeter? If it's 12, they're not even going to make it through this. So I look to see how big the tumors are, how many tumors there are, and where is it? If it started in the lungs, has it gone to the spleen? Has it gone to the ribs? You know, has it metastasized in other places? If it's metastasized in other places, the risk is great. I mean, the risk of not making it to the time limit is very great. And then I go back and look at what we've done in the prior year or the prior 6 months and say, okay, how many of these people that had this particular breast cancer came in early, and how many of them came in late? You know, I've never had breast cancer come in late. I've had it come in on time. And I've had it come in early many, many times.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those that will fool you as to how long it's going to be. So, like I said, I'm looking to see how bad it is, what kind of treatment they've had. And then on breast cancer, when it says alternate treatment, I've bought every one I can lay my hands on, because alternate treatment is not a real great thing. It's, you go to Mexico, they do the oil treatments, the orange juice, they do all this, but I've never heard of it saving a life. I never have.
So when people go seek these special radical treatments, what it's actually doing is it's allowing the cancer to go ahead and really get much more aggressive. It's advancing rapidly while they're seeking these other things instead of doing things that we know work, like chemo and radiation and things like that. So all that tells you is that, hey, you have just opened the door and let cancer run rampant.
That's exactly what they've done. It's because they don't want to be cut off. Women are really funny about that. They don't want to lose a part of their body.
Yeah.
And then we have people that, you know, have had a mastectomy. They've done everything. And in spite of it, where they had the mastectomy, it came back. And we've bought a lot of those policies where it came back the second time. And the second time, it always gets them. So, you know, sometimes breast cancer, you can survive it. But usually it's if it's stage one or stage two, and they can cure it. They can do something about it. But if it's already gone to stage four and you've neglected it, you know, the chances of survival aren't good at all.
Yeah. Yeah, we know. We've seen the numbers for stage four cancer. It is, you know, 99% of the time, I'm guessing, it is a fatal disease. And so that's why you're only bidding on stage four, is because we know by past historicals that these policies are going to mature quicker than anything else. And so that's why you go for these specific types of cancer. What types of cancer are the most? When you're looking at these, and somebody obviously stage four, but is there a particular type of cancer?
Pancreatic cancer is the one that everybody always wants in because they're always shorter than what they are telling us. We just find that if it's, say, 18 months on pancreatic cancer, if it's not resectable, if they were unable to operate, it's going to be 9 or 10 months. Now, if they were able to operate on it, they've probably got 2 years. Mm-hmm. You know, it's probably going to be a two-year policy. But the others are not. And Fasano, you know, who is our very, very best on cancer, they are so conservative. If they say 2 years on something, you can bet we can go back down and say we don't have to say 2 years. It's probably 16 months because they're ultra-conservative, which is good in our case. We know that. And I know last year we had a pancreatic cancer. They said 18 months. The person died in 9.
Ooh, wow.
And,
that's half.
Yeah, half. And we have that happen a lot. There's other types of cancers you can't be sure that's going to happen that way. But it's one of the few. And then, of course, stomach cancer and colon cancer are just, I mean, they're deadly.
And
there's
then,
others you might survive, but those I don't think you would ever. I've never known anybody with stomach cancer survive.
Yeah, and you've been looking at these numbers for years and years and years. And didn't you say at one point that even oral cancers are starting to come into the picture now? Is, you know,
they are. We've done a lot of tonsil cancer this year. And those people are already gone. The mouth and the tonsils, throat cancer. In the last year, the ones we bought, those are already gone. We none of them survived, and it was shocking that those cancers were that deadly.
Yeah.
Because we weren't expecting it. You know, they were showing they had like 24 months. They didn't have near that length of time, and so the doctors, you know, estimated it. They believed they had more time, but they didn't. So the ones we're looking at are the ones that have spread to more than one place. And the ones that said this cancer is progressing. I looked at two or three this week that said there's no sign of the cancer now.
Uh-oh.
And so I said, if there's no sign of cancer, we're not taking that on. You know, yes, it's going to come back. And they said in there, the likelihood of it coming out of remission is great.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's fine. You call me when it comes out of remission, then we'll look at it again.
Yeah. And there are
but we cannot afford to do it with it in remission.
No, you don't know when that's going to come due. And so there's a number of other companies that will buy policies like that, and that's great, you know, because obviously we want people to survive cancer as much as possible. But the reality is that it is fatal and it is deadly. And so when it does go away, that's great for the person. We wish them all the best because we're still people. But as far as an investment goes, as far as a money-making opportunity, it's just not there. So other companies will buy those all day long, and that's fine. That's what they do. But you're not going to touch things like that. Now, what about things other than the actual cancer itself, like pain medicine, weight? Those things are all factors as well.
We look at how much weight they've lost. Last time they'll say they've lost in the last 6 months 25, 50 pounds. If you've lost 25 to 50 pounds, it is serious. It's deadly serious.
Mm-hmm.
And then we look to see how many cancer drugs are on. And then how much pain, you know, the really really strong stuff. If you're on that, we know you're in it's a, like a 9 or 10 on the pain scale, and we know you're in such so much pain that this is going to be a short-term policy.
Yeah. And I know you also look at, there's so many layers of things that you look at when you look at these policies and decide whether you're going to bid on them or not. What about their lifestyle? You know, what are they doing in their free time?
Oh, yeah. And if it says they're playing golf every day, forget that. That person is not ill enough for me to be taking them on, let
no,
me be.
No,
no. No, we do not want that. And when it says, and a lot of them, they've been in and out of the hospital in the last year 4 times.
Oh, wow.
If they've been in and out of the hospital 4 times, they are so deathly ill, they will not make it. And we bid on 2 policies this week that the people are in the hospital.
They're in the hospital,
you know,
right now?
They're in the hospital right now. And I don't know if they're going to go ahead and complete the deal with us or not. We hope they will. But they are very ill, and they were in the hospital this week. And so we're just waiting to see, really. Sometimes when we're negotiating, if they go to the hospital, they're so ill, we're not sure they will live long enough to complete the contract.
That's cutting it close.
It is cutting it a little close. And, you know, we had some last year that cut it so close, they passed away before we got the contract finished.
Mm.
And that can happen. And then we have some that get to thinking either the wife or the husband talks them out of it and says, don't do it. I need to get all that money. And that's always shocking to me when they actually need it to pay the bills and the other member of the family says, no, I want to get all that when you pass away.
Wow.
I had somebody the other day, they were going to borrow money on it. And I said, do you realize you have to pay interest on that? And yet with us, you'll get almost all your money, you owe nobody, and you get it up front. You'll have all this cash. And I said, oh, you're right. We're going to do the deal with you.
Yeah, yeah.
And I also had a broker this week. It was a $2 million policy that we'd bid real hard. We thought we might have it. And the broker comes back and says, I have to make $500,000 out of it.
Oh.
I've never in my life heard of anybody making $500,000 on a policy.
Wow, that's
incredible. It's unheard of.
Yeah.
And I believe if the person that has the cancer knew that, they would not be using that broker at all.
No, probably
I know
not.
I wouldn't. I mean, they're going to get almost as much as the owner of the policy.
Yeah. That just seems a little crooked to me on a broker's part.
I think it is. And that's why, you know, we have this new license where we can go direct here in Texas and buy policies, and we don't have to go to a provider, which by law we've always had to do. And now we can actually do this, but we don't have it down yet. We're working the kinks out of it. But I know that the clients will make more money, we'll make more money, when we get people selling us their policy here in Texas direct. We just haven't got it worked out yet. We're working on it, but we don't have it perfected yet. We're working on that.
Well, yeah, that'll be certainly more profitable for investors because you're cutting out the middleman. There's less overhead.
We're trying to cut out the middleman, and we're advertising hard, but I think people just don't realize yet what it means because by law, we can't come out and say, if you have cancer, we'll buy your policy. We're not allowed to say that.
Really?
Yeah, there's some kind of crazy law that you can't say that.
What can you say? Can you say?
Well, you can say health problems, things like that. But, you know, we know our competition says we'll buy your policy and you can go on a vacation. That's not true at all.
Mm.
They're not buying those policies like that. They're advertising it, but they're really just buying the cancer policies.
Yeah, because we see those ads on TV all the time.
I do too.
you see the elderly people, you know, they want to sell their policy, and then they sell it, and then they're traveling around the world, and they're in their RV, and they're, you know, on a cruise, and you're not buying those policies at all because they're not profitable.
Yes, that's true. And I just, you know, I don't know what to think about it because we're just going straight on it and saying we'd like to buy your policy if you have health problems, you know, to pay your bills. And that's all we're allowed to say.
Well, that'll
so anyway, we're working on that. If we ever get that perfected, and we're going to, then we'll all make a little bit more money, and that'll be a great thing. But getting back to the policies that we buy, you know, we check it from everything in the world. I'm checking their age. I'm checking, you know, everything about it. How many treatments have they had? How long have they had? Is it a 2-year deal? 3 years? I've had some that stage 4, and they haven't even known about it, but for about a year.
Oh wow!
So yeah, I mean, it's moving fast. So you know, we just have to look at every angle. First of all, we have to look at the premiums also. Are the premiums high? If they're not high, we can't buy it. I looked at a $1 million policy this week, but the premiums were 6%.
Ooh.
And we can't do it.
Mm-mm.
You can't do it over 3%.
That cuts too much into the profit margin.
Yeah, the clients would have to pay. If you did one that was 6% or $1 million, clients would be, if it went over, it would be $4,000.
Wow.
We can't do that.
No.
You know,
go ahead.
So 3% is the top that we would ever do.
It's fascinating how you look at all these different aspects. You know, you're looking at the profit margin. You're looking at the severity of diagnosis. You're looking at the types of cancer, the pain medicines, their weight, their lifestyle, their age, their the treatments, the premiums. That is a lot to examine in one policy. And then you're weighing that up against, you know, what happens, you know, like the last point here is the premiums. What happens if it does go over? You were saying, you know, if it's too much, if it's 4%, 5%, 6%, you're getting into the profit margin. And so that's one of the risks, though, is if it does go over, those premiums do need to be paid. And so there's three major risks, but that usually is the first point, right?
That's right. And what we do is when people are fixing to go on a policy, they'll say, Faye, if it goes over, what is the premium? You know, and on our wealthy clients, if it's $1,800, I figure they can afford that.
Yeah.
But on other clients that are not quite as wealthy, you know, $1,000 might be all they could afford, mm-hmm. you know, and comfortably. So, you know, we have to look at all that. As I said, I did one the other day, we hope we're going to get, and the premiums is $1,000 for the whole thing.
Wow.
And sometimes that's true. And then every once in a while we'll buy one that there is no premium. That they have that rider on there that says if you have a terminal illness, we waive all your premiums.
That's cool.
And so it is, and we don't get them very often, but every once in a while we'll get one, and that is just wonderful because if it goes over, you have no exposure whatsoever.
Yeah, there's like it's all you're doing is just waiting, and so then it's a test of your patience.
That's exactly right.
For some of us, patience costs more than actual money.
That's right.
But at least it's not money. And that's really
at least it's not, it doesn't take out of your profit, so that's okay.
Yeah, and that's the whole goal.
Yeah, and then we have some that are low premium. And, as I've told this story several times lately, I thought $49 was cheap, but then this friend of ours told me that hers was $11 and something. So, you know, I couldn't beat her story, you know.
You'll have to find the policy and you'll have to beat that $11 and something.
That's exactly right. So there's just all kinds of things you've got to consider. You've got to look at it carefully and see what all your options are going in. How can we help the client? Will this make the client the money they're wanting? And so you got to look at all this, look at, you know, every angle, how much treatment they've had, how long the policy is, and see what it works. If it works, then we're going to bid it and bid it hard.
Yeah. And so when people are you know, thinking about whether or not they want to be in the policy, you know, you go through this whole process, you weigh all these things, you decide, yes, this is a good policy to go ahead and buy. And so then you buy it, and now you've got it. What happens is the policyholder gets that lump of cash. And now at that point, they're out of the picture. They go, and they can go and do the cancer treatments and do what they need to do. They've got that lump sum of cash that allows them to do it. And so at this point, now you've got this policy, and it turns into an investment opportunity for people. And so, you know, we talked about that window where the profit comes from. And so when it does go over, people do have to, you know, pay those premiums. That's one of the risks. But there's two other risks involved in this as well.
Well, and the other risk is the fact that it's not liquid till it matures. And I had a man tell his wife that the other day, they're sitting right here with me. And she was asking something. He said, no, darling, there is no cash value till it matures because you've just put your cash in the policy. Mm-hmm. And so then she realized that was exactly right. The money is in the policy. And that's what makes this such a good investment, is the life insurance company, who is worth billions, is the one that's going to pay you. And, you know, they have all this reserve set aside just to pay their claims.
Yeah.
And they also have premium income that if you and I knew how much it really was, I know some of them have $150 billion in income.
Wow.
And yeah. And some of them it's $150 million. It's just these life insurance companies, some of them own maybe three or four companies, and then they have a holding company. So those companies have a tremendous, tremendous income.
Wow, there is so much
yes.
money involved in a life insurance company. It's crazy.
There is. They are so wealthy, it's just unbelievable.
So what if one were to go under? That's the third risk, by the way.
That's the third risk. And we've never had one go under in the state of Texas. So we've never had anybody lose their money. It's also insured through the state of $250,000 if a company ever went under. But we've never had anybody use that because somebody will buy that policy before the sun goes down because of the value of those policies.
Yeah.
You know?
It's almost, I don't want to say it's not possible because technically it is, but if one was to go under, there's a couple of safety nets there involved if it did happen. And I think that's probably the big one is that, yeah, somebody would be trying to buy it before the sun goes down. So you don't even have to worry about that. There is literally so much money involved in these life insurance companies, it would blow your mind. And so that's why, you know, we look at this type of investment as a life settlement. We look at this as such a secure, and again, obviously nothing's guaranteed and nothing is 100% secure. But that's why this is so appealing to so many people, is that there's so many safety nets built in. There's so many things that are, you know, are going to happen. For one, the basic, the basic point of all of this is that the life insurance policy is going to mature. I don't know anybody that lived forever. And so, you know, it's
going
to mature.
Nobody's going to live forever. And then another safety thing, and we never talk about that, is the bank handles your money.
Mm.
You know, the money never goes to us. Your money is not over here in a Faye Bagby account or one of my company's accounts. It's at the bank where it is safe.
Yeah.
And then it's the safe deal from the bank is it's in a policy. You know, it's not just sitting there. Most of the time, all your money is in an insurance policy. And then, you know, a lot of people don't realize we'd have to have a huge staff if we didn't use these banks, because the banks do all the backup work for us. They pay the premiums. They collect the money when the policy matures. You know, they get the certified death certificate. They do a lot of work for us. And then they put all the money in the different accounts. We send them a copy of the spreadsheet, and they know who has what coming. And they know who to give the money to.
All this is mapped out before anything even happens.
That's exactly right. And they are our trustee. They serve as us, in other words.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are the ones that does the work once we get the people in the account, get it open, and get them some policies.
Yeah. And so we all know probably from some kind of work experience that anytime you have processes in place, things tend to go much, much smoother. So this is not like some kind of willy-nilly thing where, well, I guess, you know, when the policy matures, then we'll figure out who gets what. No, all this stuff is mapped out. All you're doing is waiting for the policy mature. When it does, the death certificate is signed. All that is taken care of. The money is wired to the people's accounts. So what happens once people get paid? What's the next step?
Okay, then they're calling us. They're calling and sending emails and say, do you have another policy? Do you have another policy for us? So then we're trying to get them in policies. We've got a lot of cash right now. We're setting out trying to get policies done to get all these people back in policies right now.
And so that's the key. That right there is the golden ticket. That is why this is such a great investment opportunity for people on a large scale, because they get paid, they reinvest. They get paid, they reinvest. And so the whole point of this is to make sure that you're well diversified, and that's how you set this up from the very beginning. There's no scrambling. There's no trying to figure it out later. All this is set up on the front end, and that's the thing that takes the most amount of time, because once everybody's account is set up, once you have them on the trajectory, all they have to do is wait for the money to show up in their account and say, yep, put me in that one. And then they're in another one. And then and that's as simple as that. You're doing all the work. The banks are doing their part. Everybody is doing their part. And so it's a well-oiled machine, very little effort on the investor's part. How many policies would you say for the average investor would you recommend they be in at one time?
Well, I think most of ours are in 6 to 10. Probably 6 to 10.
Okay. And so what that means...
And you need a lot of policies. It depends how much money you're going to need every year. So, you know, a lot of our people have got, like, they're making like $90,000 in interest a year. Some are making less. I know one account I saw was like $40,000, $50,000. So you want a lot of policies coming due all the time.
Wow. And that's how it works. It's almost like a leapfrog effect. While one comes in, you're going into another, and you're rolling all this over, so there's no taxes. People don't have to worry about that until they're, what, 71 and a half?
70 and a half. 70 and a half. Now, the government, if that passes, you know, this new retirement deal, they're going to say you don't have to take money up to 72.
Really?
And they're also saying that in their 401s, they can put annuities in. And so I don't know how that'll work on a 401k, but I guess we'll see.
Yeah. Regardless, you're rolling all this over. And so, again, there's another way for people to, quote unquote, save money. You know, there's when you're paying taxes on stuff, you know, that just eats out of your profit, and that's just senseless. So you roll all this over, and people, I can imagine right now, it's almost like that. I don't know how to visualize it, but it's almost like that it's like a V. You know, when you're starting out, you're at the base of that V, and then as you go through and over the next couple of years, your profit just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Your bank account keeps getting wider and wider and wider, and people are making more and more money. And I mean, that's the whole point, is to make the most money. And so that's what this is all about. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
So every Saturday morning around this time, we always talk about trivia, and you bring interesting things to the table. Sometimes it's a place to visit. Sometimes it's something to put on our bucket list. Sometimes it's some kind of Texas-related history. So what's the topic this morning?
It's Memorial Day.
Of course
Monday
it's Memorial
is Memorial Day. Everybody, at least they forget about it. Memorial Day is the fourth Monday in May every year. And a lot of people forget about all the things that happened. Not only do we have Memorial Day, if you remember, the flag of the United States, they raise it briskly to the top of the staff, and then they lower it to half staff until noon. It's then raised to full staff for the remainder of the day on Memorial Day. We have the concert at the National Memorial on the West Lawn of the Capitol. The concert is broadcast every year on PBS and NPR. Music's performed. They pay respect to the men and women who gave their lives for their country. And then there's events all over the United States. Thousands of parades are held on Memorial Day in large and small cities everywhere. And bands play, and all military. The National Guard, the veteran service members participate. And poppies. Do you remember how the poppies got started?
I don't remember how they got started, no.
Well, in 1918, Moina Michael attended a YWCA overseas secretarial conference, and she was wearing a silk poppy pinned to her coat, and she gave these out to everybody. In 1920, the National American League adopted it as their symbol of remembrance.
Wow.
1920. A long, long time ago.
Goodness gracious.
Okay. In 1915, following the Second Battle of Ripus, Lieutenant Colonel John McCrae, he was a physician with the Canadian Expeditionary Force, wrote a poem, and it was in Flanders Fields, referring to the fields of poppies among the soldiers' graves in Flanders.
Wow.
And I didn't know where that in Flanders Fields came from.
I didn't
but that's exactly 1915.
Wow.
A doctor is the one that wrote the poem in Flanders Fields.
It's amazing. You know, and that was a time period where, you know, you had, it was, you know, around World War One, and so, you know, people were coming off of these patriotic events through all kinds of parades and, you know, all kinds of drives for, you know, war supplies and things like that. So people were in that patriotic mode. And so, man, I mean, that was, it really was, and I know it was kind of archaic compared to, you know, the wars that are around the world now, and the supplies and the intelligence and the, I mean, all the technology involved. I know it was nothing like that back then, but people had a lot of pride in what they did. People had pride in, you know, those that served, and people did everything that they could, even back home, to do their part to help the servicemen and women serving overseas. So it really was a whole unified effort back then.
Well, and another thing, I didn't realize that the North and South celebrate Memorial Day, which they called Decoration Day back then, separately. It didn't start out as a national movement. It started out, you had the North doing it at one time, the South was doing it at another time, and they finally came together, you know, as a national day. And of course, in 1866, women were laying flowers on graves in 1866.
Wow.
So
that far back.
Yeah, it went back that far. And, of course, they were claiming over Mississippi to be the first Decoration Day. And nobody really knows, but I know several different cities claimed that they were the first one. And in 1868, they had a ceremony and Memorial Day address at Gettysburg National Park, and it became nationally known. And in 1913, the veterans of the United States and the Confederate armies gathered at Gettysburg to commemorate the 50-year anniversary of the Civil War's bloodiest and most famous battle.
Really?
Yeah. And, of course, every year at all of our national cemeteries, they will have a flag out on every grave for Memorial Day. And then the families on your regular cemeteries, they have always met and put flowers out.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we'll have all the parades. We'll have congressmen that always come home, and senators, and they give speeches. I've been to a lot of those. The Thunderbirds fly over on a lot of places, and then a lot of them, they have the missing man formation.
Mm.
And all that is always very touching,
oh,
you know,
boy, isn't that
on Memorial Day. Oh, it's very moving. I'm always so impressed when they fly over.
Yeah.
And then they have the cannons. I've been to some of them in the national services that they have the cannon go off. I forget how many. And then they have the bands, our military bands, which are so good.
Mm-hmm.
But there's an awful lot that happens to remind us to remember all of our people who have died in war protecting us.
You know, and that's really what the day is about. And I know, you know, there's a number of patriotic there's a number of patriotic holidays throughout the year, and those are all times to party. July 4th, yeah, go off and you know, blow off the fireworks and make it a big huge party, and it should be a celebration. Memorial Day is one where we should actually, yeah, go out and do the barbecues and parades and all that and do the things that honor people and have a good time, enjoy the weekend. But at some point throughout the weekend, it is important to remember those that gave the ultimate sacrifice, you know, to serve our country, to keep us free, to make us what we are today. And the other thing that we need to remember is also the families of those who gave their lives as well, because they have been through a lot. They have sacrificed a lot as well, you know, and it's a very difficult thing for the families that are left behind. So I just hope that people at some point while they're celebrating this weekend, I hope they do stop and actually remember what Memorial Day is all about.
Me too, and I hope they go to some of the services at our national cemeteries. There's always big services there. I've been to them many times and heard generals speak. I've heard congressmen speak. I've heard a lot of our military come and give moving, passionate speeches. And we need to remember, a lot of these people, when they left to go to war, they were 16 and 18 years old.
Yeah.
You realize a lot of the kids wanted to go to war. They slipped off. They enlisted. They lied about their age. And they went to war at 16 years old. A lot of them did.
Yeah. That is, and, that is a dedication like you don't find very often these days.
And our guys are still serving this way. The ones that have been in Afghanistan that didn't come back, in Iraq, all these other wars. And, you know, they knew the risks they took when they left, but we forget, you know, that they have risked their lives every day. And a lot of them gave the ultimate sacrifice and left family, like you said. Their families are still here. And the grief never really goes away.
Yeah, it really doesn't. And you know, a lot of times you also had that reminder all the time, because anytime you know you see a flag, and I've talked to several military families, every time they see a flag, you know, especially a service flag with the gold around the edges, you know, they see, you know, those reminders, and it's like they remember what happened. They miss their person, but they're very, very proud at the same time. So it's an odd place for families of those who have fallen to be in, because yeah, they do miss them very, very much. You know, they miss them more than anything. But at the same time, they're also proud of them, and so you know they can sit back and they can say, "Yeah, I'm proud that you know for what you've done." It takes a special person to not only be a serviceman or woman, but it also takes a special family to be able to fight through that, you know, on the home front. So it is a special type of person on both sides of the fence.
That's right. And Memorial Day, to me, is a very solemn, like you say. We have the barbecues, we have the picnics, but everybody, if they can, should attend one of the services. And I know over in Odessa, I don't know about Midland, but I know that they're having a big parade with all the service members. The sheriff over there is a friend of mine. He was telling me about that he will be leading the parade for our service members. And you know, in remembrance of those who have not come back. So I was very proud of the things they're doing. But I know every town usually has a memorial service dedicated, you know, to all the ones who did not return. And we should remember that and be thankful, because, you know, we wouldn't be here today without them.
No, we wouldn't. We say that all the time, but it becomes one of those things that I think, you know, for some people just kind of goes in one ear and out the other, and they're like, yeah, blah, 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 whatever. But I think a lot of people also at the same time really do stop. And maybe they go about their lives, you know, 364 days out of the year, and they don't really think about it. And that's fine, I guess. But, you know, this is the one day that if you're one of those people that doesn't, you know, pay homage to our servicemen and women you know, throughout the year, this is the day to just take a few moments. And I think there is a moment of silence this afternoon at 3 o'clock local time. So wherever anybody is, whenever it hits 3 o'clock, there's that moment of silence. You can either have that moment of silence or listen to Taps. I think that either one is acceptable at 3 p.m.
I always listen to the Taps. I've done that all my life. And like you say, at 3 o'clock, the nation should pause for just a minute and remember all of our dead.
Yeah.
And war heroes. They're all heroes. It doesn't matter which one it is. They're all heroes in our country.
Oh, yeah. Because, you know, you can't take one person out, or one troop, or one division, or one aspect of it. You can't drop out and then, you know, just other people make up for it. It's not how it works. You know, the military is designed so that it is for lack of a better term, a team effort. I mean, everybody plays a role. If one thing doesn't happen, it affects, you know, several other people and their duty as well. So it really is. No matter what anybody's done, from you know, cook at base camp to, you know, the commander in chiefs, you know, they're out there in the field and you know, giving orders for battle plans and things like that. Everybody involved in the military and their families play an equally important role. So it is an important day today, or this weekend. So please, on Monday, take a few minutes, especially at 3 o'clock. Pause for a minute and honor those who gave the ultimate sacrifice. And happy Memorial Day. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're right next to Ivy Cottage at 3105 Big Spring.
So we're talking about ways that people can get ready for retirement. They can save, they can invest, they can grow their wealth so that they are ready, because, you know, we're always looking at retirement and we always think, hey, I want to retire, you know, in this particular year. If people are even more focused on this particular day, maybe this particular month. And so we always work on getting up to retirement. But what happens after retirement? Once that paycheck goes away, how do people keep growing their wealth?
Well, they have to keep investing. If you're fully invested, you're going to have income all the time. You're going to have interest coming in. I don't care who you are, you need interest coming in. Someone asked me this week, they said, well, when we're sitting there with our money in between, do we get any interest? Yes, you get overnight Fed funds, even then. So you're making some interest on your money at all times. And I like that. And it's important that you always have your money invested where you've got that interest income, whatever amount you've set is your goal every year. And just because you retire, that doesn't mean you don't need income. You don't want to sit here and use up all of your principal. If you use your principal up, you're going to run out of money. And I know two couples, I've written it down, and I'll bet you in 3 years they have no money.
Really?
How about that? Yeah.
Wow, that's dangerous.
My prediction. It is dangerous. One is a single man, and I guarantee he's going to spend every dime he's got and then wonder how he's going to make it. The other ones, I think, have been very foolish, and I don't think they'll have any money to retire on. Unless they make a big change, I don't know how they're going to get any retirement money. They've already spent some of their retirement money, like $300,000.
Whoa!
Yeah, they've already spent that on a business that's making no money whatsoever.
Uh-oh, that's not good.
And they didn't believe me. And I thought, well, let's just let them go. I mean, you know, you can't save the world.
Right.
You can save part of the world. You cannot save people from themselves.
Well,
you
know,
you just have to let them go broke and let them do it.
You're full of knowledge. You're full of experience. You know how this works. You know what people should do. You can take a look at somebody's portfolio and say, yeah, you should be doing this and this and this. But in the end, it's their money. So if they're not going to do it, then, you know, there's only so much you can do. But you do have the experience. You do have the knowledge. And if people will actually just stop and listen and think it through, you know, you can put them on the right track to not only get to retirement, but like you say, afterwards. And if you are after retirement, if you're, you know, 6 months, a year into retirement, and you're not still making that money, all you're doing is hemorrhaging cash, and at some point you're going to end up going back to work, and you don't want to do that when you're 71 or 72.
You can't. Nobody wants you.
No.
I mean, let's figure it out. At 70 or 71, the oil field is going to say bye-bye.
Yeah.
You know, unless you're awfully, awfully good at what you do. But what amazes me, you have to have money invested. You can't be like Chicken Little, the sky's falling, and you put it under the bed.
Uh-huh.
It will not make any money under there. You have to have it invested every day, but do it something conservatively. Don't take 100,000% risk.
Yeah.
If you do, you may lose. Another thing, you know, all these people from Texas and other places, Fort Worth, have moved to Mexico. It's a little town, and I can't tell you the full name. I know it's got the word Oriente in it. And it's 120 miles from McAllen, Texas.
Mm.
And I was reading this week how the bank has just stole all their money.
Really?
Big, big risk banking in Mexico, folks.
Wow.
Don't take the risk.
I didn't hear about
that.
They
have different laws than we have.
Wow.
The first couple was building a house down there. They're from Fort Worth. They're a retired dentist. And they had been making draws out of their account down there. They called to make the draw, and they said, I'm sorry, you have no money. That's how they found out.
Oh, man.
And there was other people. There was one guy, he's in his 80s. He'd been there for about 10 years. He needed money. They falsified a statement and sent it to him, so he didn't find out for another couple of months. But all these people are scrambling. How do we get our money back? And they can sue the attorney general down there, the government. They're going to have to do something. Because this person stole the money, she worked at the bank, and it's gone. And what she did on several accounts, she opened another account, moved their account there, and then took it out of the bank. And the bank swears they did it. Said, oh, no, you did that.
Mm.
In the meantime, they have no money.
Wow.
You're talking about going back to work. Bad situation.
That is a scary position to be in, I tell you what, man. So what about the people who are saying, okay, this is all great, this all makes sense, I can mentally get around what to do, I get the concept of getting ready for retirement, but what about when I do retire, you know, because you know that people have certain spending habits once they get to retirement. So what's it look like generally for most people in the first 5-6 years of retirement as far as spending goes?
I talked to some people this week about this, and I said, I know the first 2 years you will spend more. And they've already got it figured out. They're going to go and travel. And I know this. Everybody does. So the first 2 years, you've got to have a travel budget, a regular budget, a budget for everything. So the first 2 years, you're going to take out more money. I can tell you that. And that is simply because they're going to spend more. Then it'll slow down. Then they'll just be traveling in Texas. But that first 2 years, they're going to travel to probably everywhere in the world, Europe, everywhere. They're going to take cruises. Everybody takes cruises. It's just Alaska is the biggest one.
Sounds like fun.
And it's $5,000 a person.
Whoa.
I didn't know that till the other day.
Me neither.
And one of my clients told me. I said, well, what did you pay? She said it was $5,000 for each of us.
Huh.
I thought it was about $2,500.
Yeah.
And I found out, no, it's a lot more expensive than they thought.
Huh.
So all these things add up. You have to make a mental note before you retire and say, okay, let's figure $150,000 the first 2 years or $100,000 or whatever, and then maybe $70,000 a year afterwards.
Okay. So you get people to that point. You get them, you know, what they need to be on. You put them on the trajectory. You put them on the path to make what they need, knowing all of this and then understanding that people's spending habits will start out pretty bold, and then they'll start to back things down. And so you'll make sure that it's all there. Then once they do retire, you're still investing. The process is still going on because they still have enough cash to live on, so they don't have to worry about eating ramen noodles every day to keep investing. No, there's enough there. You've got them enough so that they can still do their traveling. They can do what they want to do and still be making more money, still investing in more policies. And that's a really brilliant, huge, that's a big deal as far as the big picture goes. So to be in part of the program, one does have to be accredited. So what does that take?
Okay, you have to either make $200,000 or you have to be worth $1 million without your house. You can have a beach house, you can have a lake house. Those all count. Your ranch, your cattle, rent houses, everything counts except your real house that you live in.
Okay.
So, or if you make $200,000 a year, and everybody does right now, including their bonuses, mm-hmm. you know, they can qualify to come and do something. Now then, let's say they don't qualify. Then they can do annuities. Annuities are safe. They've been around 150 years. There's all different kinds of annuities.
So, no, go ahead.
Lots of times you retire from a company, they'll offer you an annuity. It's going to be just a fixed annuity, fixed rate, 3%, 4%, whatever. But if you'll do an index annuity, it has more opportunities to make more money. And you can change it every year, every way in the world. So those I would recommend would be a fixed annuity with an index in it.
So there's a number of options to get ready for retirement. The hardest part is always getting started. And so I assume you have some availability for people to come talk to you this week how to get started.
That's right. And they come, we go over it, we talk about it, I send them home. Now, some people say, no, Faye, we want to do the account today. We need to open an account. Okay. And then some say, okay, we'll go home like you suggest. We'll think it over. And 2 or 3 weeks later, they'll come back, and then they're ready. And so you want to make sure they're ready, they understand everything, they know what the risks are, they know what the rewards are, they know what they can make, and how they can retire healthy, wealthy, and early.
And that's the whole goal, retiring healthy, wealthy, and early. And so the hardest part is to get started, and the first thing you need to do to get there is to make a phone call and come see you. So, Faye, one last time, what is your phone number so people can make an appointment?
Okay, it's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. 3330.
You've been listening to Your Money with Faye Bagby, sound advice to help your money grow. Listen for Your Money with Faye Bagby every Saturday morning at 10 here on 97 Gold.
This program has been a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and has been brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.